much of what we talk about with misinformation is really about how do we stamp out bad information. And I'm really interested in how do we actually immerse ourselves in good information, and what are the ways in which our systems and policies and structures can focus on how they have an obligation to each of us as citizens to be able to sit within that good information, and what that good information can do as sort of like fertilizer nutrients for all of us to be able to be as successful as possible, both individually and as a collective community.
I should be back in
the worst people on the internet. This is mostly a protest, but fires have been started.
The
journalism industry is overrun with elite, underqualified, rich, entitled nepo babies.
How are you, baby? How old are you?
I don't know. People should not be walking around with masks.
Russian disinformation.
Stewards.
I'm finding myself hard-pressed to want to give this woman any more oxygen. We know who she is. We've seen her statements. We've all heard of her speech clips. She's speaking here to the Berkeley Forum. Once again, this is Catherine Marr, NPR CEO. I find this clip interesting because notice when she says she wants to stamp out bad information to combat disinformation. She says so much of the, you know, problem with dealing with misinformation is so many people are following bad information on the internet. And then she goes on to say she wants to replace bad information with good information. And she does this with kind of, you know, progressive white woman quiet voice, but notice she doesn't say true information. And she doesn't say factual information. Again, this summarizes what they all believe. And it's just kind of an add-on to what she said yesterday. And as I've always said, in this fight of misinformation, disinformation, what they consider, the media has only themselves to blame. And it's that simple. Because when they stop caring about what is true, as we talked about yesterday, there's the truth and the truth. And when they stop caring about that, people are just going to say, fuck it, I'm going to go read what I want, listen to what I want. I'm going to go view Twitch streams that I want. I'm going to listen to podcasts that I want. And it might be Joe Rogan, and it might be Alex Jones, and it might be Steve Bannon. It might be anything. Because you stopped caring about what is true, so how do you expect us to care about what is true? And I think that that is the heart of all of this. And I'm not going to go off on her anymore kind of today. I found this interesting. Because these journalists are just up in arms. They have no idea how do we stop disinformation and misinformation. Well, you can start by not spreading it yourselves and actually giving a shit about what is true and what is not true, and who it hurts and who it helps is irrelevant. And I don't need to kind of stand on my soapbox and repeat this diatribe, but when they stopped caring about what is true and journalists decided we're not going to care about what is true anymore, we're going to bury stories, we're going to exist in an explicit bias for one political party in this country, we're going to not report on stories that help somebody like Trump or hurt somebody like Joe Biden or Hillary Clinton or what have you, then you can't expect the rest of us to just jump on board, because it doesn't work that way. The internet, and I would argue social media platforms, are the great leveler. It brings us all kind of to the same level where you guys just don't control narratives anymore. And yeah, there's a lot of people out there pushing debunk information, and especially on Twitter X these days, where they're paid to do it now. The only way to combat that stuff is for actual journalists and news institutions to give a shit again. And they don't. And as long as they don't, guess what? You're going to be stuck in a whole ocean of bad information, and we don't care. It's April 18th. I want to start off with somebody in comments. I joked yesterday that this is the Elden Ring and Boz. And I had a couple people ask me privately, and I saw comments, if did I ever finish Elden Ring? I did a whole call-in episode with Neon Taster on it, because I'm not a gamer, but I do appreciate games. I buy maybe 2 or 3 games a year, and I rarely finish them. On my last break, my fall break, I bought Spider-Man 2. Because I love the first Spider-Man. I was like, yeah, sure, why not? I got a week off when I had some downtime from other personal stuff. I thought, what the hell, I'm going to buy Spider-Man 2. I haven't finished it. I got like 3/4 of the way through it. Spider-Man has the slimy white suit, and I'm just like, I'll get around to it, I guess. So I don't really finish big games like that. I'm not a completionist. You know, when you do all the little side things and you collect all the little trophies or whatever. I did with Red Dead Redemption, and I did an episode about Red Dead Redemption a long time ago. And I think I even did a Ricochet episode with Leon Wolf, who was talking about it. And so I can get into some of those games. I got the Harry Potter game, and it's gorgeous, but I got maybe barely not even a third of the way into it. I still have it on my PS5 downloaded. I may revisit it someday. Just, again, I think it's a gorgeous-looking game. But Elden Ring is one of those that just captures gaming imagination. It drops you into the world, doesn't tell you what to do. You're on your own, and you have to go for these little side quests, and you just have to kind of run into people, and you have to kind of remember them, and then you have to go look them up, and if you want to finish quest lines or whatever. But I never finished it. I got to the final two bosses, the Elden Lord, whatever, the monster, and I couldn't beat him. I went back and I changed all of my stats and I did it, and I still can't beat that fucking guy. And then there's, of course, Melania, who I'm referencing to Catherine Marr. Close. With both of these guys, I can get past the first stage. And I'm not a purist. I know the Dark Souls games, there's a whole, speaking of bad information and internet clicks, there's a whole culture around the Dark Souls games that is kind of the companion to what Elden Ring is. And there's purists out there who say you can't summon your spirit ashes. If you don't know what I'm talking about, don't worry about it. Turn off the first 20 minutes of the podcast. You can't, you know, they don't summon, and then also they don't use certain tricks. I don't do that. I'm going to beat these fuckers any way that I can, except I never beat them. And I put the game away. I'm like, nope, I'm done. I beat this game. Screw you. I don't give a shit what you say. I made it all the way to the end. I'll go Google the next cutscene. I never did. And I even, like, took it off of the PlayStation to make room for other games, except, again, I only have one or two on there. And I don't play a ton of video games or anything like that. It's just kind of a time suck when I have time. But, no, I don't do the headsets, and I don't do every game, and I don't do the online shit. I'm bad at most online games. I did get Call of Duty World War II, but I only did that because I wanted to, you know, do World War II. And so people asked me if I ever finished Elden Ring, and I said no, I never did. However, and then I kind of forgot about it. Now there's an expansion, a downloadable content coming out, I think in June, and I saw it, and then I watched the trailer for it, and I just went, fuck. Okay. So I bought the expansion. Again, it comes out in a couple of months. I may play that on my – I take a summer break, so maybe I'll do it then. And I thought, well, shit, I have to get back into this game. And so I re-downloaded it, fired it up, and then there were my characters. I had the Vagabond. I have a Confessor, which was my favorite character, just theme-wise. And then the Samurai. I don't do any of the wizard shit. That just feels overwhelming. I like the stabby stab. And I pick up where I left off with my Vagabond. He's like 138, and he's at the base of the Elden Tree. I'm like, oh, okay. I just have this guy to beat. And I go in there, and that's the dude with the one arm, and then he has the Elden Ring in his side, and he just destroys me. I'm like, okay. And then I go and I pick up the Confessor character, and he's in the mountaintop area. And I have no idea what he's doing. I don't know at what stage of the game he's in. I completely forgot. It's been months. So I thought, okay. And similar to my samurai, I just got the cool metal helm, the big metal helm for the samurai. So that's it. Okay. So I thought, you know what? If I'm going to play this downloadable content, I'm going to just start over. I'm going to create a new character. So I created a new confessor character because I like the incantations. I like the idea of an Opus Dei or a crusader character. And so I just said, yeah, I'm just going to start over. And I got through the first area, and I remember how to grind. I remember how to kind of farm in the early levels to pump your stats up early. You go into Caelid, the bloody area, and there's a couple areas where you can just sit there, and the monsters kill the dudes, and you get all the ruins, and you just, like, level yourself up before you even start the game. So I started to remember some of the paths I was doing and whatever. And I got through the first area, and then I got halfway through the second, and I thought, I don't want to do this. Because I started remembering all of the fuckers that I had to beat. And all of the places you had to explore, and all of the dungeons. If you want this sword, you got to go do that. And if you want that, and I just went, no, I'm not doing this. Not doing this again. And so I just jumped back into my confessor character. He was like at a level 100. And I thought, I'm just going to complete this dude's quest line because he's high enough. And so I did some restudying, and I kind of redid some of his stats to make him a little bit more less squishy, which was the biggest problem. And I got back into it. And so I completed kind of the snow area, and then you set the tree on fire. If that's the way you decide to go, you set the tree on fire. And I got through the capital, and I replayed some of these areas, and then I got through the medallion through Melania, and she destroyed me. So I went, okay, I'm going to come back to you. But this is kind of just a anecdotal, stupid Thursday story before I get into our president talking about cannibals. And so, long story short, I'm on the verge of probably beating it with this character, and then I'm going to do the download coming in June. So that's the Elden Ring update. People were asking me about. So no, I still have not beaten it. I'm going to try to beat it with this dude. And yeah, and then wait for the downloadable content. So it was just funny because I was like, oh, they're going to pull me back into this. And I was like, nah, redo a samurai, redo another guy. And then I got half, and I'm like, nah, I'm not going to do all of this again. I'm sure there's people who will. I don't generally play through games more than once. I did with Red Dead. And that was about it. No, that's the Elden Ring update. I think I wised up. It was like, I'm going to go through all of this again. Nope, not doing that. I'm not doing that shit. I remember one of the bosses in the snow area, this monster with a skull and a scorpion tail. And I went, I'm not fighting him again. Nope, not doing that. I'm not doing the goddamn giant lava worm. I remember on the call-in, I think it was Joe, asked me about Malekith. How do you beat the armored lion cat? And I beat him the first time I played him. And then it took me a few more with this guy. But I did beat him after like three or four runs. And I'm like, okay, I remember how this stuff works. So that's where he's at. I'm ready to go fight the Elden Lord. And then I have to beat Milani. And that'll be that. But I am excited for the download. It's one of those games where I was kind of wished they would keep updating it. So we'll see. I might do a review once I've played the expansion. I want to talk about Joe Biden and specifically, again, our media and how they treat Grandpa when he spins one of his yarns that can never be confirmed. And this might be a bit of a cliche episode, but I think it's important because I have a few audio clips and then I want to read a couple of the way that they cover this president who just makes up some of the most fantastical stories we've ever heard. And like I said, Joe Biden has put himself squarely as the most interesting man in the world. He is the Forrest Gump of presidents who just moseys about his way, semi-retarded, and he just happens to be inserted into some of the most important events throughout history, whether it's World War II or the Civil Rights Movement or whatever it is. And it's important to contrast with someone like Trump because this is what our media does. Remember, through the Trump years, every single exaggeration or whatever was blown into a week-long news cycle and treated as though it was every single thing was fucking Watergate. Whether it was a Sharpie on a map for a hurricane or whether it was how many ice cream scoops he gets or how he fed fish, his inaugural crowd size was treated like the Pentagon Papers. And you got an indication early on about how they were going to be combative with him. No, sir, you cannot lie. That is a sacred podium in this press room. You don't dare. That was the attitude, if you remember, that they had with Sean Spicer. You can't stand up there and lie to us, sir. This is sacred ground. This is sacred holy ground, this White House press briefing room. We do not allow lies in here, sir. Except we know through the Obama years that, of course, they did. And we've seen now that, of course, Jen Psaki did. And she was fine. There was no questions of integrity with Jen Psaki. In fact, she was offered a very lucrative contract with MSNBC where they said, oh no, we're not hiring the White House press secretary. She's just going to be a contributor. And now she's all over the channel. Similar in a way that George Stephanopoulos, of course, is now the news director and the political news director at ABC. They think we're stupid. And this goes back to what Catherine Marr said. You want people to trust you, maybe don't hire Democratic operatives to lead your newsrooms. That maybe we can start there. But if you recall the way that Trump was covered, every single exaggeration, and I'm not going to say lie, because while Trump is prone to exaggerations, he has a pretty extensive public biography. There's not really any stories about Trump ignoring his grandkids, like with Grandpappy Biden out there. And this is the distinction that we have in this election. We have a grade A lifelong serial bullshitter in Donald Trump against a guy who has made up every single thing about his personal biography to the point to where we actually don't know a single thing about him. And I don't think that that's an exaggeration. We have President Verbal Kint sitting in the Oval Office making up stories just so he can get his way through an interview or the term or whatever it is. And he did one yesterday that is a perfect example. And the reason I'm going to go into this is because the press and the media actually sort of kind of fact-checked him. And we don't see this when they should be doing this, and they could be doing this with Biden, once a day. Because every day he pulls something out of his ass that is untrue. He's made a career off of it. And like I said, he's been running for president since the mid-80s. And in his first campaign, if you recall, he had to fold his campaign over plagiarism charges. He plagiarized Neil Kinnock and said he came up with a speech on his own. And then they just went and journalists actually did some journalism. And they found out that Biden plagiarized Neil Kinnock in parts of his biography and his speeches. And then, of course, there's the famous clip of Biden pointing at journalists and going, I bet I'm smarter than you. I'm top of my class law school. And then it was like, Biden was forced to admit later that he was not top of his class in law school and had to drop out or something. And that's what ended his campaign, and he never really recovered from it. Biden ran for president almost every single 4 years until he actually got the job. The one time he didn't run for president was when Hillary ran, because Obama said, Joe, it's Hillary's time and you need to stand down. And I still argue, had Biden run that in that campaign, I think Biden probably would have been the nominee against Trump. But it was Hillary's time, and Barack told him to stand down, and of course his son's health and everything else that happened that he doesn't remember. And of course then he ran 2020, and he finally won. He was the last guy standing out of that whole group of old school Democrats, the Hillarys, the John Kerrys, the Dick Gebhardts, the Jerry Browns, those types of, you know, 80s, 90s into the 2000s old school Dems that all failed, and Biden didn't fail. As much as he's been a punchline in Washington, D.C., and with the media for pretty much the entirety of his career, he just simply outlasted them. And so we have example after example after example of Biden making up the stories and retelling these stories that he's made up. The famous, he's ridden on Amtrak more than, you know, 100,000 million miles, and the conductor, oh, Joe, he called him Amtrak Joe, except we learned that this conductor never did that, and this conductor died several years before Biden tells a story. He tells stories from his past as a child with his, supposedly with the two gay neighbors that had to be fact-checked. And they do this on and on and on and on and on. We had a doozy yesterday. And what the media and what the press wants to do here is basically say, Joe Biden's lies are no big deal. He's just telling stories. Except you are the guys that made every little exaggeration from the previous president into a national scandal, an exhaustive national scandal every single week. So when you just write off Biden's bullshit, we see this. And yesterday had everything. It had his personal biography. It had him citing the Atlantic story about Trump saying suckers and losers at Normandy that has never been confirmed. And Biden made up a story about his grandfather at a war memorial in context to criticize Trump over a story that is not confirmed, that is somehow just accepted as fact from the Atlantic. And the best part about this is he did it twice. I have some clips. I'm going to play Biden. And then I have a couple of stories, one from NBC, one from CNN, and one from the Associated Press, where even they are kind of like, this probably didn't happen. And it's always interesting to me what stories they choose to pick of Biden's and pull apart. Because we know if they did, a president who's already sitting at 37-38% approval, imagine where he would be with an honest media and an honest press that fact-checked this guy, exhaustively fact-checked this guy, like the guys who got entire careers and paychecks at CNN, people like Daniel Dale, people like Glenn Kessler. Biden visited a war memorial yesterday, and he told a story about his grandfather in World War II, and I want you to listen to it. I'm sure you've heard this if you've been around on Twitter X or whatever, but for those of you who aren't, you're going to absolutely love this. Here's Biden speaking in front of a crowd, either at a rally or a war memorial, about his grandfather and his service in World War II.
Military. Every one of them volunteered. And my uncle, they called him Ambrose Brosey, they called him Bosey. My uncle Bosey was a hell of an athlete, they tell me when he was a kid. And he became an Army Air Corps before the Air Force came along. He flew those single engine planes as reconnaissance over war zones. And he got shot down in New Guinea. And they never found the body because there used to be there were a lot of cannibals for real in that part of New Guinea. And then my son volunteered to go to Iraq for a year, and he came back with stage 4 glioblastoma. Military. Every one of them volunteered.
Did you get that? I know it's a brief cut, but did you hear what he said? His Uncle Ambi, which is grandfather, flew a single-engine plane, and he was shot down during the war over New Guinea, and they never recovered his body because there were cannibals. This one even had journalists going, what the fuck did he just say? Once again, you had the President of the United States spinning a tale that his Uncle Ambi grandfather was shot down in the war, and he said this at a war memorial, honoring troops, and they never recovered his body because he was eaten by cannibals. Okay. That seems harmless enough, except he'd said it at a war memorial. Biden then repeated the story on the tarmac. And I think that the tarmac was actually prior to this, but I wanted to play that because the audio was clear. Here's Biden again, yesterday, for the second time, telling that exact same story.
Ambrose Finnegan, they called him Uncle Bosey, he was shot down. He was an Army Air Corps. Before there was an Air Force. He flew single-engine planes, reconnaissance flights over New Guinea. He had volunteered because someone couldn't make it. He got shot down in an area where there were a lot of cannibals in New Guinea at the time. They never recovered his body, but the government went back when I went down there and they checked and found parts of the plane and the like. And what I was thinking about when I was standing there was when Trump refused to go up to the memorial for veterans in Paris, and he said they're a bunch of suckers and losers.
Okay, so apologize about the airplane noise there, but there he said it again, Ambrose Finnegan. His grandpappy, Uncle Ambi is what they called him, flew reconnaissance flights prior to the Air Force. There was the Army Corps. And he stepped in for a guy who couldn't make it that day. And then he was shot down and he crashed his plane in New Guinea. And apparently he was surrounded and cooked by cannibals who ate him because they never recovered his body. No joke, man. When Trump would spin bullshit yarns, and I would argue Trump never does stories like this. He just is kind of a grade A bullshitter. He's a salesman. He doesn't really make up parts of his biography. And like I said, I would argue it's because Trump is, for all intents and purposes, an American cultural icon. And I don't mean that favorably. I just mean it factually. This is a guy who we had a pretty public history dating back to the 1980s. I am so sick of him. And I think that there's people who think like me, like, this guy has been in the public eye for good part of 40 years, the 80s. He was the boxing guy. He was always front row at Mike Tyson's fights. That was kind of my introduction to Donald Trump. Whenever you see, pay-per-view Mike Tyson fights, you spend like $200 on him and then Tyson would end the fight in 30 seconds. And then there was always Trump, and they had interviewed Trump. And then because he started hosting boxing at a lot of his casinos in New Jersey and Atlantic City. And that's just who he was. He was kind of the most popular, well-known mogul in the country. He was an expert at just branding himself. Everything that he ever, like, product-wise did failed. Steaks failed. Water failed. Football, he couldn't be successful at. The guy literally failed business-wise at the most popular things in this country. Steak, vodka, gambling, football, and water, which we need to live. And people were like, I don't want Trump's bottled water. He failed at high-speed air travel and Trump Airlines and whatever. But he is an expert at marketing himself and his name. His name meant something. And he was kind of just that in-your-face, Gordon Gekko-style lifestyle guy that everybody wanted his life. And he was awkward and he was brash and he was kind of upfront and he was rude. And then, you know, it all kind of went away. And then he got The Apprentice and he's the number one star on television. And NBC just turned their entire network over to him. And it was all fun and games until he put his hand on that Bible in 2016 and was sworn into the Oval Office. My point is, Trump doesn't say lies like this. He doesn't make up things that are out of whole cloth. It's, he lied about a policy, or he said he's not going to get rid of Obamacare, and that's a lie. So politically, he says stuff that can then be cross-fact-checked or whatever. Which, great, he should be. That's how all presidents and politicians should be checked. Biden makes up things whole cloth. And we saw how the media dealt with Trump. Here's how the media deals with Joe Biden. And I'm going to read parts of these stories. Associated Press, Zeke Miller, who is the embed campaign for Associated Press. You might remember Zeke Miller, who was the campaign embed. And I forget who he was for, if it was The Atlantic or Politico. It was one of those. And Zeke Miller put out a tweet one time. He was on the bus with Romney. That Romney's bus passed by a Confederate flag in the South. And he said nothing. That was a real thing from Zeke Miller. For those of you with long memories, here is how Zeke Miller characterized this story by Biden. Biden is off on details of his uncle's World War II death as he calls Trump unfit to lead the military. Off on some details? He's just a little off. He's fine. Reading from this story, President Joe Biden on Wednesday misstated key details about his uncle's death in World War II as he honored the man's wartime service and said Donald Trump was unworthy of serving as commander-in-chief. Biden makes up a story about his uncle to honor service members on a war memorial and then criticizes Trump. There's a bit of stolen valor here. It's not directly Brian Williams style. But to make up a story about your grandfather's service instead of just being like, well, you know, he served honorably and he died in an accident, which I'll get to. While in Pittsburgh, Biden spoke about his uncle, Second Lieutenant Ambrose J. Finnegan Jr., aiming to draw a contrast with reports that Trump, while president, had called fallen service members suckers and losers. Finnegan, the brother of Biden's mother, got shot down in New Guinea, Biden said. The president said Finnegan's body was never recovered, and there used to be a lot of cannibals in the area. Biden also relayed, putting aside again, New Guinea's just full of cannibals, and remember how inclusive and intersectionality and how problematic this would be. Biden, who was also relayed a version of the story earlier in the day after stopping by the memorial in Scranton, was off on the particulars. The U.S. government's record of missing service members does not attribute Finnegan's death to hostile action or indicate cannibals were any factor. "We have a tradition in my family," my grandfather started, said Biden, a toddler at the time of his uncle's death in 1944. "When you visit a gravesite of a family member, it's going to sound strange to you, but you say three Hail Marys. And that's what I was doing at this site." Referring to Trump, the presumptive GOP nominee, Biden said, "That man doesn't deserve to have the commander-in-chief for my son or my uncle." The story then goes on to talk about the suckers, losers, Atlantic story. But then it comes back to Biden. According to the Pentagon's Defense POW MIA accounting agency, Biden's uncle, known by the family as Bozy, died on May 14, 1944, while a passenger on an Army Air Force plane that for unknown reasons was forced to ditch into the Pacific Ocean off the northern coast of New Guinea. Both engine failed at low altitude and the aircraft's nose hit the water hard. The agency states in its listing of Finnegan, three men failed to emerge from the sinking wreck and were lost in the crash. The agency said Finnegan was a passenger on the plane when it was lost. He has not been associated with any remains recovered from the area after the war and is still unaccounted for. White House spokesperson Andrew Bates did not address the discrepancy between the agency records and President Biden's account when he issued a statement on the matter. Quote, "President Biden is proud of his uncle's service in uniform," Bates said. "Then why does he have to make it up?" Adding, Finnegan lost his life when the military aircraft he was on crashed in the Pacific after taking off near New Guinea. Biden highlighted his uncle's story as he made the case for honoring our sacred commitment to equip those we send to war and take care of them and their families when they come home. This is the president of Afghanistan, Andy. This isn't going to work. As he reiterated, the last thing American veterans are suckers and losers. After Finnegan's death, a local newspaper published a telegram from General Douglas MacArthur expressing condolences to Finnegan's family. "Dear Mr. Finnegan, in the death of your son, Second Lieutenant Ambrose J. Finnegan, Jr., while in service to his country, I have my profound sympathy. Your consolation may be that he died in the uniform of our beloved country, serving in a crusade from which better world for all will come. Very faithfully, Douglas MacArthur." Biden, in his 2008 book, Promises to Keep, made only brief mention of his uncle, describing him as a flyer who was killed in New Guinea. So, a few double whammies there. He wasn't shot down. He wasn't eaten by cannibals, which is just the craziest thing in this whole statement. Like, people just go, wait, what? Did he just say his uncle was eaten by cannibals in New Guinea? I do find this humorous. This is the same president who traffics in the cliches of slight Indian accents at 7-Eleven. That was another fun one from the Wayback Machine of him. So he's honoring his service and his veteran service by making up a story about how he died. Because it appears Finnegan just tragically died in an accident. That the plane he was traveling in with two other service members was not a single-engine plane of just him. Wasn't flying reconnaissance. It took off, and then it crashed shortly after takeoff, low altitude, hit the water. Tragic accident. None of what Biden said there is true other than the fact that he died in World War II. This is also reminiscent of Biden's story about his first wife, who was killed by a drunk driver. And as we learned, that man's family almost took Biden to court over it. They had to issue a statement to tell Joe Biden to stop telling the story that their father, their family member, was a drunk driver who killed his wife, when the reports of the accident are that it was her fault. This is similar to this, that this man has to make up stories to make himself and his family constantly a victim of these spectacular world events or circumstances swirling around him. And this also brings into question about his possible sundowners, senility, his mental acuity, because it's great that his uncle served or his grandfather's family served. That's great. You don't have to make up a story about how they lost their life, similar to what he does with his son. It's great that Bo Biden served his country in Iraq and served in the military. You don't have to make up a story that he died there, because he didn't. And Biden states that his son worked in burn pits and came home with brain cancer, except there's no linkage that they can find that the work that Bo Biden did in Iraq led to the brain tumor that killed him. And that to me is the most weirdest thing about all of this, that why does he have to elaborate and make up stories when it's fine that his uncle served in World War II? That's great. How did he die? He went down in a tragic accident, but he's still on the memorial and he still served. But he doesn't do that. Here's NBC News. And then I want to get to Karine Jean-Pierre. President Biden mischaracterizes the circumstances of his uncle's death during World War II as he lambasts former President Trump's comments about the military. He mischaracterizes the circumstances. Gosh, if there was only one word he could use to describe all of this stuff. He's off on the details. He mischaracterizes. Suddenly, these guys can't figure out how to use a word lie. And like I said, we see this. People see how these two things are treated. NBC News, Biden mischaracterizes his uncle's disappearance during World War II. Biden was drawing a contrast between the military service of his family and Trump's inflammatory rhetoric about military members. Is that what he was doing? Thank you, NBC, for telling us what the president was thinking. Megan Leibowitz. President Joe Biden on Wednesday mischaracterized the circumstances of his uncle's death during World War II as he lambasted former President Trump's comments about the military. Quote, he got shot down in New Guinea and they never found the body because there were a lot of cannibals, for real, in the part of New Guinea. Biden said during his remarks invoking his uncle Ambrose J. Finnegan. However, U.S. military records about Finnegan's death do not mention the aircraft's being shot or discusses cannibalism. For unknown reasons, this plane was forced to ditch in the ocean off the north coast of New Guinea, the records say. Both engines failed at low altitude. The aircraft's nose hit the water hard. We've already been over this. The three men who were killed in the crash were never found, records say. NBC goes on to say, Biden also frequently talks about his son, Beau Biden, who served in the Delaware Army National Guard and was deployed to Iraq. His son died in 2015. Is he sure about that? After a battle with brain cancer, Biden has previously misstated that he lost his son in Iraq, though his son died in the U.S. after he returned home from military service. Biden also apparently mischaracterized the war record of another uncle of his when he spoke erroneously of trying to present a Purple Heart to his uncle Frank. According to factcheck.org, he lies about everything. And all NBC and the Associated Press can do is just go, he kind of just mischaracterized it. No, this is a form of stolen valor. It's not like directly stolen valor, but it's putting your family above that of other service members who lost their lives. I would argue it does a great disservice to actual veterans of World War II who were eaten by cannibals. I put on Twitter X, CNN just treated the story like Matt Damon walking into his apartment at the end of The Departed. Okay. Just get it over with. Here's CNN. Biden says military unable to recover uncle's remains during World War II because there used to be a lot of cannibals in New Guinea. They just said, fuck, just print what he said. Now, credit, I guess, to Zeke and AP and NBC for going, this isn't true. And I would argue they did this because he's on military service. So when Biden lies about his family service, that's something that could possibly get people to go, why is he lying about the military? And so that's why I kind of think they all went hands on deck on this one and went, nope, you got to correct that. You can't be lying about military service, especially in the context of hitting Trump with it. Again, the suckers losers thing bugs me. Not because it sounds like something Trump might say. It's because Jeffrey Goldberg of The Atlantic ran a story that is unconfirmed, it's sourced anonymously, and it's like third person. When, to their credit, Trump's aides all came out and said he wasn't even at the location when your story says he was. And then when Jeffrey Goldberg went on Brian Stelter's CNN show, and they said, what do you say to the pushback on this or whatever? Jeffrey Goldberg said, well, we have more sourcing that's going to come out on this, that we will have confirmation. And it never happened. Not a single journalist got Jeffrey Goldberg, or still does, and go, hey, you said you were going to follow up on the sucker loser story. How come you never did? because it sounds like a game of telephone. It sounds like somebody went to you and said, oh, somebody said they heard Trump say this or whatever. Well, who was with him? Well, we can't tell you because of, you know, administration, whatever. Oh, okay. Oh, we'll just run that. And that became pretty much how journalism was all reported during the Trump years. Unnamed anonymous sourcing, which is a cardinal rule break in journalism. If you're going to use anonymous sourcing, you should use several. We know that a lot of standards of journalism went out the years during the Trump years. Calling in interviews, Morning Joe said, oh, fuck it, put Trump on the air, who cares? Let him call in. It's great for ratings. And then all of these stories, especially at the New York Times and people like Maggie Haberman, whose Trump is her source, just said, anonymous sources say, sources who could not be identified out of fear of, as they are not supposed to speak within their purview or what have you. And it was just accepted. It was an industry-wide standard that just out the window because of Donald Trump. And you want us to care about disinformation and misinformation? The Atlantic story is classic disinformation. It's unsourced. It's anonymous, which means it can't be verified. And none of them care. It's just accepted as fact. You have Joe Biden out here going, he just suckers, losers. And not a single journalist, because of their stance, because of their knee-jerk, reflexive attitude against Donald Trump. Whatever he says, we have to be against because it's Donald Trump. When Donald Trump calls MS-13 animals, we have to say he called immigrants animals. Well, technically true. But we all have eyes and ears, and Scott Jennings was one of the guys on CNN, maybe the only conservative voice on CNN, who pointed that out and said, go to the tape and listen to what he fucking said. Because this is allowed to fester and this is allowed to go on, and then it's just canon. Oh, Trump called migrants animals. No, he didn't. Yes, he did. He called migrants animals. He hates immigrants. He hates migrants. Maybe. But he didn't say what you said he said. And that's what we talk about, what is truth and what is fact. Here's Karine Jean-Pierre, and I want you to listen to this because she's asked about it, and I want you to listen to the tone of the journos. And this is, I assume, was on Air Force One because there's only audio. So she's gaggling with the press. And one of them says there's a tab in her big-ass binder that she would just be a child lost in the woods without. And I guess it said cannibals. So when Biden went out and told the story, the White House goes, is that fucking true? Get on that. We need to confirm this before the press does. And then they go and they run out there and goes, oh shit, the old man said his uncle was eaten by cannibals. Okay, get the tranquilizer dart ready. We'll clean this up. Clean up on aisle 46 again. Here's Karine Jean-Pierre, and I want you again to listen to the tone and this friendly gaggle. They're all just having a laugh over it. Again, we notice these things. Here's Karine Jean-Pierre trying to get out from under this story, and this is incredible, the way she spins this. Here it is.
Can we just see the cannibal tab in your book?
There's no cannibal tab. What are you talking about? Is that what you want? Is that what you're asking me about?
Can you fit us in?
Yeah.
Okay, look, I'll just, and I think we shared this with some of you, so I'm just going to kind of repeat. Look, you saw the president. He was incredibly proud of his uncle's service in uniform. You saw him at the war memorial. It was incredibly emotional and important to him.
Where he made up a story.
You saw him respond to all of you when asked about the moment yesterday. And his uncle, who lost his life when the military aircraft he was on crashed in the Pacific after taking off near New Guinea. The president highlighted his uncle's story as he made the case for honoring our sacred commitment to
made up story
equip those we send to war and to take care of them.
Amazing.
And their families when they come home. And as he reiterated that the last thing American veterans are suckers or losers, and he wanted to make that clear. He wanted to make
the story.
I mean, look, I don't have anything beyond about what I just laid out, but it was a really proud moment for him. It was incredibly emotional. I think some of your colleagues, as you know, Zeke, were there.
Clearly.
And they got to witness the president pray.
They all sit there and take it.
War memorial, look for his uncle's name, honor him.
By making him up.
We can't forget that moment. And we cannot also forget what it means to be a commander-in-chief, what it means to lift up our service members, what it means to make sure that we respect their service. And he made that contract very clear as to what we saw from the former former president. Sorry, guys. Thank you.
Just a warm, friendly gaggle. Lots of giggles and laughs all around. Quite the different tone, I would say, than the previous administration, wasn't it? This is why this is important. why a silly story about Biden's biography is because he does it so often that this one instance suddenly gets fact-checked by several news outlets. While Biden makes up a story to criticize Trump in the context of an unconfirmed, anonymously sourced story that can't be verified because The Atlantic won't verify who said it. And they never followed up like they said they would. So yeah, I find this whole thing dubious. But it is interesting to see how media narratives get turned into canon around Donald Trump, while Joe Biden and the media can just giggle about making up false stories of his family's own military service. And that includes his uncle and his son. The NBC and the AP ones are the best examples, but I want to read some of these headlines. CNN, of course, Biden says military unable to recover uncle's remains during World War II because there used to be a lot of cannibals. USA Today, Joe Biden suggests his uncle was eaten by cannibals during World War II. Yahoo, why did Biden suggest his uncle was eaten by cannibals? This was MSNBC via Yahoo. The other funniest thing I just note is that every photo they put of Biden with this story makes me laugh. Like, he has just the Walter puppet ventriloquist, the Jeff Dunham Walter look on his face. But here's Biden, goes out, and this is why he doesn't sit for interviews, by the way. Because if he can't get through a personal story without lying or making something up, how does he do without his pre-scripted questions and his notes? Every time this guy goes off script, he pulls some fantastical story out of his asshole, and they all just giggle and laugh about it. When we're sitting here going, I don't think that this is the biggest thing in the world, except he does it so frequently. Every day he does this. And there's exactly one account in the entirety of the website of Twitter that goes out of its way to correct, and it's the RNC research account, which I've said in the past, I don't like to quote from, I don't like to highlight because it's a political party account. But I'm forced to because our journalists let this shit go. And we see it. We see how you guys treated every little thing that Trump said. The way that Trump would explain using UV light, for example, to treat a virus. And he goes, you inject the body with sunlight? Is that something we're working on? When everybody knows what he means. And they go, oh, he meant the UV light thing. Now, should he be that inarticulate? No, he shouldn't. We should have better leaders than that. But when we see you guys take that quote and go, he just told everyone to inject bleach. What? No, he didn't. Have you tried the hydroxychloroquine? Oh, that's a horse paste medicine. No, it's not. It's right over there. There's medicinal use for it. Does it work on the virus? No. But he's not talking about the horse tranquilizer. Yeah, he's talking about the horse tranquilizer and he's talking about injecting with bleach. We see this. And then we see how every stupid little yarn Biden tells just gets laughed off. T. Beckett Adams, columnist The Hill, NRO Examiner, good guy. I've known Beckett for years. Twitter X, to just wrap this up, I'd say that making up a story about cannibals eating your uncle qualifies as a bit more than being off. And that's the craziest thing. He could have said, oh, he went down. He took 5 Japs with him. He threw himself on a grenade, and he took an entire battalion with him, and he saved a bunch of dudes. Which, I mean, you could argue would be worse if he said that, but how the hell does he just work in cannibals? It's insane. He's eaten by cannibals. What? Who told you that? Beckett goes on to say, it's amazing how far some will go to avoid confronting the reality that Biden is as big a liar as a previous president, if not greater. He is. I think he's probably the worst actual liar I've ever seen hold the presidency in my life. Now, we know politicians lie, they spin. But like I said, Joe Biden is the presidential equivalent of verbal Kent sitting in the usual suspect's interview room pulling shit off the bulletin board. It's astounding. Beckett finishes by saying, Biden will come out and say stuff like, my grandpappy invented the pencil, no joke, he invented the pencil, and that's what ended the Spanish-American War. And groups such as the Associated Press will run a headline like Biden blurs the line between fact and yarn. Husser notes, jumping into questions from yesterday, the Columbia University Center for Grown Adults Who Can't Read Good and Who Want to Learn to Do Other Good Stuff Too. Good reference. Lambo notes on NPR. Links to a story, the Florida Don't Say Gay Bill. This was one of the stories where Yuri Berliner said, why are we using this frame when it's not even in the bill? There's nothing in the bill about don't say gay, but media adopted that. This is another good example. NPR, Don't Say Gay Bill would limit discussions of sexuality and gender in Florida schools. Joe Hernandez, and that was from February 2022. Lambo says, running articles through the affinity group before publishing is how you end up with phrasing like, quote, versions of the so-called parental rights and education bill passed a Florida House committee in January. In this NPR piece from 2022, the actual title of legislation gets the so-called qualifier, but the headline, of course, features the Don't Say Gay activist moniker. It's a great example of this My Truth approach to journalism. The official title of legislation is merely Ron DeSantis and the Florida legislature's truth. Don't Say Gay is our truth, so that's what we're running with. And if you recall, I had an exchange with a Florida Sun Sentinel journalist who said, hey, it's just good branding. That's why we call it that. It sounds good. It doesn't matter if it's true. It's just the activist branded it. Don't say gay. It kind of rhymes. It's punchy. It pops. So they ran with it, as opposed to going, this is not what the title of the bill is. This is a great example, and I'm sure several of you can just go through NPR and see how they've adopted this language and then claim, oh, no, we're integrity journalists out there. You know, we're not biased. We have diversity of thought. Ivan, who had a few passionate comments on the thread. And this was a good comment thread yesterday from you guys. Like with the folks shit, they are simply hand-waving it all away by saying that they are all for diversity, but not for misinformation, which any viewpoint counter to theirs magically falls under. They simply change the definition of things to meet whatever nebulous blob of shit they happen to be that day. And they've done it with words like democracy, by the way, to justify throwing Trump off the ballot or prosecuting him with his political opponent's DOJ. They adopt and accept the terminology and language of Democratic Party politicians and the progressive left, and they do it whole cloth with things like disinformation, with things like democracy. And again, until they stop doing this, sorry, Catherine, you're going to have to continue to deal with that ocean of what you call disinformation and bad information. Doctor, heal thyself. Once again, it is April 18th. I will be back here tomorrow to finish out the week. I did want to welcome one new subscriber. I wanted to welcome Ben Savage, who upgraded from the freebie dreg level. So now you guys all know what we think about the freebies around here, just sucking off the teat of the podcast, enjoying their free preview. Their preview today is of fucking video games and Elden Ring, so I hope they're happy. That'll get a ton of them to convert. Fun one today. Just ripped right through this one. No matter what you do, subscribe on the podcast. It is fun when I'm able to just kind of rip through these and I don't have to stop and interrupt my fun diatribes with ads from sponsors or commercials or advertisements, anything. If you notice, I'm 100% independent media, and that's because of your subscription. I don't do ads on this podcast. It's completely ad-free, and I'm sponsor-free. And I hear from a lot of you that more and more podcasts do have ads, and it's just distracting. And so, yeah, I like hearing that. The other thing that's important about your subscription with sponsors is if I don't have sponsors, I don't have to worry about journalists, activists, whomever, coming after my sponsors to get them to drop me, which could affect either my income or it could affect me being deplatformed or whatever. I've never had to worry about that, and that's one of the best things about a subscriber model is that it's one of their favorite tactics, and your subscription, regardless if it's the monthly or the yearly or whatever, keeps all of that nonsense at bay. You guys are kind of my meat shields that I can just kind of throw spit wads over the heads of, and you protect me and this podcast from those kinds of silly shenanigans. With your subscription, you literally rob journalists of one of their favorite weapons and tactics, which is to come after sponsors of people they deem to have wrong think or whatever. So again, thank you. I don't read this off of a script. I know I end every episode this way, but it really is just important that you know that. So again, thank you. I'm Stephen L. Miller. This is the Versus Media Podcast. Like I said, I will be back tomorrow. And as usual, speaking of, don't ever, ever, ever talk to journalists.